Okay, Tiff. So I think we really need to come up with a signal. I know we're about to go to this meeting, and we really need to come up with a signal in case one of us gets into trouble. Like, we need to come up with something so that if you say something that I think maybe is going to set off the client, or I say something that's going to set off the client, we've got to have something to where we can basically tell each other stop without actually telling each other to stop. Do you have any ideas?
Maybe like a bird call, like a caw-caw.
Or maybe like,
is that too obvious? Burr. That's a little too obvious.
Maybe I'll just blink very quickly.
Oh, wow.
I have really long eyelashes, so even if you're Ooh. Not looking at me, you may feel the wind sort of reach
Oh, you. That's perfect. It's perfect. All right, we're set. We're ready for this meeting.
Excellent. Well, at this meeting, we're going to discuss the season 2, episode 7 of The Office. It is The Client, and I know I say this a lot, but genuinely, this is truly and wholeheartedly and sincerely one of my favorite episodes of The Office, because for once in not too many episodes, we get to see Michael actually being competent, and
yes.
makes me happy.
Yes. Oh, I totally feel the same way. I love when we see him succeed and we see why he's in the position he's in.
Well, and I think too, like, you know, sometimes people would probably, if they hadn't seen this sort of episode, they would think of it as being less realistic, because it's like, oh, the producers made this show where an incompetent person gets put into a job that he's not qualified for. That would never happen in real life. But by doing these kinds of episodes, we see the skills that Michael has and how he made his way to the role that he has. And it's all very... it becomes more understandable how he got the management position. And even in the first episode where we see him sort of help Jim get a sale, it all makes sense, because he is very good at selling paper. And mm-hmm. we don't get to see him do that much now that he's in management. And it's interesting because, and I don't know if this has ever been a situation for you, but I've certainly had it where at my last job, for example, I was once, you know, writing and producing and anchoring and doing all that kind of stuff. But then I got moved into a management position and didn't get to do as much of the stuff that I did before. And I think that is a very realistic thing for a lot of people, where they end up moving up in roles and they sort of lose the stuff that they're good at, and maybe, you know, you sort of feel sad about that. And I wonder about Michael, like, itching to get back into the selling as much as possible.
Yeah, he does like to close on the big sales that we find out later. And this one, he's closing with Jan on a big sale for the entire county of paper, like schools and hospitals and everything that is associated with that. And I love that even though he's this goofy person, and you could see it as this one-off, like, oh, how could they write this in, that all of a sudden, like, where did this competence come from? Where did this ability come from? But it really is a through line of the Michael character, mm-hmm. because he's so into business is people, mm-hmm. right? And the idea that it's all personal, and it's all about people, and it's about connections, and it's about friendships. And that's how he lives his life. And that's how he tries to run the office. And a lot of times he does it because he tries too hard. He cares too much. He pushes too much to be the funny, likable person. But in this situation, it's the idea of becoming the funny, likable friend person that ends up closing the deal for him. It's the people, it's the connection. Because as we saw, I think it's totally fine to jump ahead, but we see Jan trying to start the deal. And I think right in the beginning of the episode, she's telling Michael, like, just don't say anything. She doesn't have the faith in him to accomplish this task. So she's basically telling him to just quiet down. And he's kind of there as like the face of the area because he's from Scranton. And Michael turns it around beautifully to let go of the cold corporate, you know, big city vibe that Jan is presenting in, like, wanting to get right into the numbers, wanting to get right into the deal. And Michael spends the time to connect with this person, as a friend, in laughter, with food, with drink, like, and then he brings in the deal. And it is just fantastic because it really does show that his methods, although weird, kind of make everyone feel better if that's who you're going to be buying from. Mm-hmm. You know, I love it. I love it.
I mean, you've said this in many words. It is the fact that Michael remains himself through and through. And so there's no break from him being who he is to make this deal happen. It is because of who he is that it happens. And yeah, there's so much pushback there. And at the beginning, like, I think they make it so that you are almost on Jan's team in a way. Like, he switches mm-hmm. it from the Radisson, which is this very highfalutin kind of place to have a meeting, to Chili's.
Ben, again with the Chili's back. We're always Chili's back at the Chili's.
And it's, you know, you're going, oh no, this is not how you do a business meeting. But that's the thing, is he doesn't want to do business in that way because he knows that this is not New York, New York. This is Scranton, Pennsylvania. And
yeah, he's playing to his audience, right?
Exactly.
Like, if it were New York, it would be different, but it's not. It's Scranton, and he knows Scranton. If anyone knows Scranton, Michael knows Scranton.
Yeah, and in fact, he sort of teases Jan about not knowing Scranton at all, and mm-hmm. that's how she ends up writing with him. Do we want to, I know this is now jumping way back, but just to touch briefly on the cold open here.
Oh, yeah.
Delightful, delightful, because they're actually, for those of you in office lore, there are two pairs of Michael jeans, and these ones are his Levi's, and he really likes the way that he looks at his Levi's, so much so that Pam decides to throw them under her desk and keep them from him.
Another instance of Pam being kind of mean.
Yes.
Right? Like,
yeah, those are his jeans.
You know, kind of a mean girl throws them under her desk, like, without even caring.
And it's not only like that alone, but it could also get Ryan in trouble because Ryan was the one who went and picked up the dry cleaning. Right. So if Michael's like, where's my dry cleaning? And then, yeah, it's not good. Not good, Pam. Not good.
Mm-mm. It was a little hurtful there, because if Michael, I mean, right? Like, you, I would get upset.
I would definitely be upset. Like,
but the montage of Michael in his jeans is what makes that cold open brilliant. Like,
yes, it really is. At one point, he has like two trash cans underneath his legs and he's riding it like a horse. Oh, so funny.
It's good. It's a really good cold open.
I would like to see Michael in his jeans. Like, what is like a whole episode of Michael in his blue jeans?
Oh my goodness. I can't even imagine. But another thing we find out in the beginning of this episode, before they get all the way to the Chili's, was they are kind of the people of the office during one of their breaks. They are discussing worst dates that they've ever had, or worst first dates. And we start to find a little bit more in the beautiful way that we do about the characters and their histories. And we find out that Pam was left at a sport game, like a minor league hockey game, mm-hmm. by her date, because she went to the bathroom towards the end and her date and his brother left without them. And it comes to the surface that
yeah.
that person who left her was Roy.
It was literally the person that is her fiance, and none of us were surprised, right? Like, we all, once Kelly started asking, was it Roy? We all were like, oh, of course it was Roy, because that's just entirely and totally Roy. And, you know, I saw this as an interesting moment, because Pam does get a little awkward, but not so much so that she like walks away. Cause that's what I would think Pam would do in this situation, would be to just sort of get upset and sad and walk away. But she, and maybe it's just like trying to show how her character is growing, but she sort of, you know, laughs it off and sticks around. So she's getting like thicker skin or something.
Yeah. Her character is growing more. I feel her becoming more and more emboldened. You know, she's showing more of her personality. She still has that meek retreatist kind of feeling to her, but she is getting more pranky. She's getting a little bit more louder when she's speaking. You know, in the beginning of this season and the first season, she speaks very quiet, you know, mm-hmm. and even in all the interviews and the things, she's very timid. And it, you could think of it as a she's getting more comfortable around the cameras.
Yeah, good point.
Maybe she wasn't as, like, this is more normal Pam, because it was the first, the first season and half of this season so far, is it was her being nervous around the cameras, right? Like, yeah. not and being shy and not knowing how loud to speak or who, how to be. And now maybe she's feeling more emboldened by that, you know, like she's just more being herself, because we are seeing a slightly more Pam.
I like it. And I think that that's, yeah, that definitely has to be the case, because otherwise, I don't know, it was just like, it would have been a poor character choice, but if there's growth there, then that totally makes sense. So yeah, we've got the first dates going on, and then now it's time for Michael and Jan to go ahead and head off. And I want to talk about this moment too, because it goes with our ongoing thread about Michael performing in front of the camera and trying to look competent. Now he's doing it for two reasons, the cameras and also for Jan, where they are about to leave and Michael turns around and he tells everybody that they can go home. And Jan is like, wait, you send everybody home every time you leave for a meeting? And you see Michael's face like, oh no, how do I save myself here? And he goes through like three different iterations of trying to figure out how to make it sound good, because each one he says has like a twinge of, oh no, that still sounds bad, that's still not good.
Yeah, every time he's just putting his foot in his mouth. It's just so good.
Deeper and deeper.
One thing, so there is a big B plot in this episode. And since we already touched on like them at the Chili's closing the deal and the way Michael was, I just need to point out about that. We didn't say Jan's face when he turns it around, and or just like the whole time watching Jan's reaction.
Yes, that's what that, like, that is what that part of, that whole, the whole A plot, or I guess I would technically, it's technically the A plot, but it's B plot to me. But regardless, that whole plot is all for, in my opinion, just keeping my eyes on Jan and seeing how she reacts to everything, because it's glorious.
Jan is us, right?
Yes. At
this, in this whole thing, it's like Jan is essentially the audience reacting to Michael going through the phases of the way he, the art of his deal, I guess.
I love it.
It's the best way to do it, because it is, the way he does it and her face the whole time and her reluctance and then her eventual acceptance when she figures it out and he then takes the reins and is like, don't say anything, Jan. I got this. Like, it's just glorious. But I really want to dive into this B plot, because it's a lot of things.
It is a lot of things.
I'll set up the scene, how it gets sparked, and then we can go from there. So during Michael's wooing of Christian, who is kind of the head of the county that they're pitching to at Chili's, he decides he wants to tell a joke to Christian. And so he doesn't know quite what joke to tell, because Jan only will let him tell one. So he calls up Pam. She finds him a joke. And while in his office, she discovers an interesting discovery. Do you want to tell us about that, Micah?
Yes. So yeah, she's putting the books away, and she comes across a screenplay for Threat Level Midnight, starring Agent Michael Scarn, who of course is Michael Scott. And she sees this, she like sort of, you know, goes through the notes a little bit, trying to figure out what it is, finds out it's a screenplay, and then immediately takes it to Jim. And they're both like, oh my God, we have got to read this. We have to do a table read of this, clearly. And the whole time you're like, yes.
It's like they struck gold.
They did.
They struck comedy gold coming across this, because they're picking through it. They can't believe the characters and how funny it is. And then they discover some art. Yeah, it's just, oh, it's so good. A fun little bit of trivia about the art in the screenplay that you see in the show. They originally hired a professional artist to do the art that they find that Michael supposedly had done, but the artist was too good and it came out too competent. So they grabbed the show's producer, Greg Daniels, and he drew them instead.
Oh my Lord, that's funny.
So yeah, they all sit around and start their table reading, right?
Yeah.
Some of the great things that come out of this. I love that Catherine Zeta-Jones is a character in the screenplay.
Yeah, just straight up Catherine Zeta-Jones. It's like, it's not somebody. No, it's just Catherine Zeta-Jones.
So yeah, of course, Jim is essentially gamifying the situation by inviting everyone into the conference room to do a table reading. And who is objecting to this? It's Dwight.
Of course it's Dwight. Dwight feels like it's an invasion of privacy. And like, I understand where Dwight's concern comes from, because I think, I mean, I wouldn't keep my secret screenplay at the office in the first place. But if I did, I would hope people wouldn't, like, if I wasn't ready to share it, that people wouldn't read it. And so I get where his concern comes from. But as soon as Jim says that he could play Michael Scarn, then Dwight's sold. He's like, okay, never mind. I forget all of my protestations. I'm definitely going to be a part of this.
And that's Jim's perfect play to Dwight's ego. And it's also a testament on how well they all really kind of know each other, that Jim is so quickly able to turn Dwight's mind around with that suggestion, so that he can, because he knows how much Dwight idolizes Michael.
Yes. Let's briefly, I just want to cut back so we can sort of add some flavor to the other scene, because there's a lot that goes down right in a very short period of time, because we sort of at the beginning are still seeing this as Christian and Jan being on one wavelength and then Michael being on another. And mm-hmm. or that, you know, like that's the assumption that we make and what it looks like. But now that Michael has a joke and has suggested an awesome blossom and all this other stuff, we see that Christian and Michael are on the same wavelength and Jan is on a different wavelength. And so this is the part where Michael stops Jan. She's talking to Christian and laying out all of these details of the thing. And you see Christian sort of start to get a little nervous or worried about what's going on. And so Michael's like, blah, 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 to try and stop her, because he said in the car that they needed to come up with a signal so that if they got into trouble, then they wouldn't have to do what he did. But he had to do it anyway. And that's a good moment. But Michael continues. You see Jan sort of try to cut in every now and then. And Michael continues to sort of push on by ordering some baby back ribs. I want my baby back, baby back, baby back. I want my baby back,
Chili's,
baby back, baby back. I want my baby,
baby back ribs.
Barbecue sauce. Very good.
Totally unrehearsed. Yes.
Yeah. Wow. First one. First go. Awesome.
Blossom.
So, awesome blossom. I almost had awesome blossom coming out of my nose. Oh boy. So yeah, they're doing that. And then we cut back to the office and Roy is like, hey Pam, time to go home. But guess what? Pam is standing up for Pam. And she says, no, I'm not going home. I want to stay here. I have to stay late at the office. And Roy sort of kind of, this is an interesting moment, I think, because Roy realizes that there's no work to be done. They're all just sitting around having fun, being silly.
Yeah, because Pam's excuse was, I have to work late.
Yes.
And he was like, seriously? And she was like, yes.
She gets him, like she convinces him, which is nice that she decides to stay around.
But the evening quickly does turn. They stop the reading because they come across something in the script that upsets one of the players. And that is the dwigged.
The dwigged.
And what happens is Michael has written in a bumbling sidekick for his Michael Scarn character. And he, you know, the person had a name. And then eventually, I guess there was a search and replace done. And the person's name used to be Dwight, but the search and replace doesn't work when you misspell words. So there was a dwigged. And Dwight figured out that he was written as the bumbling sidekick and gets very upset by that, because you're talking about his hero right now. And so Dwight decides to just, you know, leave the reading, and he's like, I have some fireworks. I'm going to go shoot in the parking lot. I'm out of here. Right. So he leaves, and mainly Jim and Pam decide to stay and have dinner together up on the roof.
Yes, and it's very sweet.
Funnels into a little bit of a romantic evening for them.
Oh, romantic evening. Because yeah, this is like, again, Dwight has built up this vision of himself and who he sees himself as and who he thinks and how he thinks other people see him, in particular Michael Scott. And so for this to come at him, essentially, for this to happen, it is a realization that he is not as respected and appreciated by Michael as he may have thought. And that can be a big ego crusher. Like, he had his ego crushed in that moment. And in order to try to, to thwart what he's dealing with, what he's feeling, he's like, let's go blast some fireworks and forget about this stupid play. Mm-hmm. And Jim makes his famous grilled cheese sandwich. Pam and him get to watch fireworks from the roof. And it gets pretty romantic.
And Jim even says that he had to cancel some plans with a friend in order to do this that night. And I can't help but wonder that that friend was probably Katie.
Wow, I didn't even think about that. It probably is Katie.
Yeah, because he's never mentioned like hanging out with friends before, or going out with friends or anything. And I feel like he said that to downplay his relationship with Katie. Like,
holy moly, you just cracked it wide open, Tiff.
I know. So there we see, we have both of them kind of with Jim and Pam having this essentially date together, but not a date because they both canceled plans with the people they're with. This is how I'm seeing it anyway. And they're, you know, up on the roof having dinner together. And it's because they wanted to do this. Like they wanted to spend time with each other more than anybody else. And that's pretty telling.
Yeah, I agree. Again, she stayed instead of yep. going home with Roy, and then it turned into this, and she's having a great time. And she even mentions like that it's been a long time since anyone's ever, or maybe that was like the first time or something. It's regardless, it's either a long time or it's the first time that anyone's made a meal.
Yeah, she says, I wrote it down because she's like, I can't remember the last time someone made me dinner.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, she drops these bombs in this episode, like about Roy leaving her, about, you know, I have to stay for work. I can't remember the last time someone made me dinner. You know, like we're seeing this kind of dejected side of Pam.
And the juxtaposition of how Jim treats her in relationship to Roy.
Yeah, exactly. He's making grilled cheeses for her. He's canceling plans for her. It's just... It's the building of this relationship that's done brick by brick, that's so delicate and wonderful the way it's all written together, because mm-hmm. they really are building a very full, loving, rich relationship between them as friends first.
Yes.
And it's so wonderful to watch. Like there's chemistry, but it's not only the chemistry that we're seeing. We're seeing the reality of when you fall for somebody. Like this is how it is. Like that's how you get to know them, you know? Like it's just it feels so good.
Yeah, there are times when I have mentioned before that I get sort of yawny about Pam and Jim's relationship, but when you appreciate sort of these small moments that take place in it, it is gorgeous. It's beautiful, it's sweet, and it is, I think, a television representation of what tends to be a long and loving relationship versus the sort of love at first sight, sort of smash it together in a matter of milliseconds. And, you know, you are married in a week from then. And it like mm-hmm. There's just so much, again, like you're saying, bricks, they're bricks built, and it makes for a very strong relationship with a good foundation. And speaking of relationships being built, Michael, he finally comes in for the kill. They're standing now. It's like by the bar, they're standing at these bar tables and drinking still. And Michael finally decides, okay, this is the time. This is the right time to come in for the kill. And he slowly works his way in there to get Christian to give the business. And you see Jan realize what's happening, and she starts to say something. And Michael sort of is like, no, I got this. And keeps going. He gets it, makes it happen. And that's where Jan is like, oh my gosh. And so they get the deal, and you see, you know, Christian leaves, and Jan and Michael are celebrating outside. They're so happy they got the deal. And then suddenly they're making out.
So we see the two sides of what's going on. This, I love how they balance these two plots together, what's happening back at the office and what's happening over at the Chili's, because you get Jan and Michael kiss over their exuberance of closing this really, really big deal. Because as they pitched in the beginning of the show, they were saying if they got this deal for this particular branch, that it would possibly prevent downsizing because it would be such a big account that only this branch could handle because it's for the county it's in. And then on the other side, we see Jim and Pam kind of like sharing earbuds and like listening to some music together as they leave and making jokes together. And just sharing earbuds puts you in such physical proximity of each other, right? You have to be close and you're listening to music and it's late at night.
Plus it's gross and unsanitary, but that's beside the point.
It's not gross.
It's so gross. Don't put your earwax anywhere near me ever. Thank you.
How deep are your earbuds in? I think you have a problem.
How deep? How dare you? That is a very personal question you've just asked me.
But
don't earbud shame me, Tiffany Arment.
No, you're not taking this moment away from me. It's a beautiful Jim and Pam moment.
Fine.
I love it.
It's
so
beautiful
much.
And full of earwax and lovely.
Oh, it's not. They have very clean ears. But so they're physically close to each other. And then you see Jan and Michael actually kissing. And it's like you want that for Jim and Pam, but they don't go there, you know. And it is like late at night. No one's there. It's, you know, they just had dinner together. It's this whole thing. And so that evening scene between bouncing back between the two sides, it's really good. It sets up all the feelings. And then we get to the next morning, which I don't know about you, but in the watching this, I'm like, I can't believe this episode is still going. This is all happening in 20 minutes. And you know what?
Yes.
We're going to go long talking about this episode because there's just so much that happens. So we have to.
I felt that way too. I could not believe, like, oh my, I forgot that this still keeps going after that all happens. I thought that that was going to be the end of it.
I paused it and I was like, is this an hour episode? Because eventually we do get into hour long episodes. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh wow, is it starting already that they're doing an hour? I was like, no, they did all of this in like 22 minutes. It's unbelievable. So next morning.
Yeah. Dwight stays the night because Michael, before he left, said, you have to stay here until I get back. And he said, that's an order or something like that. Made a joke about it.
Oh, that's right. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Dwight takes that seriously and thinks that he cannot leave the office until Michael comes back.
That's why he stayed the night. I was like, what is with him staying the night? He couldn't drive home. Like, why did he? And he's like sleeping in his underwear on the couch.
Underneath the safety blanket, for the love of God. So he wakes up because the lights come on. It looks like they're in like an automatic switch, essentially. And he goes and looks out the window and sees that Michael still isn't back yet and his car isn't in the parking lot. And he's like, I need to call the police to make sure there hasn't been an accident. But it turns out that Jan pulls up in a taxi, gets into her vehicle after the cameras catch her.
Angela spots it too.
I love it. The look on Angela's face is so good. Like, oh, where have you been, hussy?
And also she's in there first, right? So she's essentially like there early, bright and early, ready to go, like the way she, it again, is super telling about the character that she is. Mm-hmm. She's the first one there. She gives that hard, judgy look to Jan, and it's just great. So, like, now that Dwight and Angela kind of both have seen Jan return in her clothes that she wore yesterday and drive off in her car after she arrives in the cab, the rumors circulate the office about what went down.
Ooh,
very quickly.
What happened? Ooh.
This place leaks like a sieve. Like, it's crazy how fast information gets around. Because Michael has a confessional with the camera. The camera gets so close to Michael's face during this confessional when they're kind of asking him what happened with Jan, and he's like, oh, I'm going to be a gentleman. I'm not going to kiss and tell. And it gets closer and closer and closer. And without basically any pressure at all, he totally caves and kind of tells them, like,
I wrote that whole moment down because I love that moment where there is like, they probably just asked him once and then the camera zooms in on his face because it's almost like they know very well that he's about to reveal it. And so they're zooming in, like just waiting for the change to happen. And then suddenly he's like, da 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 da, boop. Here's the answer. It's pretty funny. And like, we just knew it was going to happen.
Yeah. And then we quickly also hear that Jim and Pam also are aware of what happened with Jan, even though that they weren't there that morning to witness it. Again, a testament to how gossipy the office is. And this scene with Jim and Pam at this point, when Jim decides to, he starts talking to Pam, they almost have a serious conversation about their relationship and kind of what happened the night before in a way that it's jokey Jim,
mm-hmm.
but he's telling one of those jokes that it's a joke, but it's super serious and everyone knows it. And
oh yes,
he says like, oh, well, it was kind of our first date. And she's like, oh yeah. And he's like, yeah, we ate dinner and we danced and we did this. And right away she's like, we didn't dance. It's not a date because we didn't dance. Like, she grabs onto the one thing and he's like, well, we swayed to the music, so it's kind of dance. She's like, no. And he then very kind of hurtfully brings up what happened. Like, he brings up the information he has on her about Roy leaving her at the game and saying, well, at least I never left you at a sport game. And so it was like, oof. He takes this kind of personal information that he has about her and uses it as like a hot prodding iron to like, what, well, I guess he was trying to be like, highlight himself as the better person, but really by even just using that and saying it, it was really hurtful and bad. And it's one of those conversations that you come into and you're like, oh, this shouldn't have happened, but it did. And I shouldn't have said those things, but I did. Like, yeah, it's so real. I've had those conversations. I mean, I'm sure you have too, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yes. And it's so like, it's interesting hearing her sort of, or watching her rather, kind of find the out in the joke. Mm-hmm. Because neither of them really wants to confront the truth of it. And so they dance around everything while it's almost like, sword fighting while they're dancing back and forth. That's where they're making the jokes. And then every once in a while, there's a touche or a hit. And that is the moment whenever they throw in that little serious bit. And it's like, I am not comfortable enough to be 100% vulnerable around you. And so I'm going to be 50% vulnerable around you by burying my truths in these jokes that I'm telling and seeing how you react to them. And if you react well to them, then I'm going to open up even more. And when I think it's like a part of Jim getting hurt and also a part of Jim sort of going with the jokiness over the seriousness, where maybe Pam was more towards serious than jokes. And so that's why she takes what he said so seriously whenever he says the thing about leaving her at the hockey game. And it's just, it could be tough watching them sometimes because of the way that you see their miscommunications take place. And it's all based in like them both knowing how they feel about each other, but not being honest about it.
Yeah, it's like they just spent an evening that was like probably very laden with feelings between the two of them. And what they're not saying to each other was, well, that was a thing, you know, and then they're trying to hide it in the jokes and they're trying to hide it in whatever they're trying to hide it. And it's just they both just can't get there yet. And this is one of the most honest conversations they kind of had with each other. And I think that that's why that Jim said that thing, because it kind of boiled up in him. He was like, he almost basically screamed, why are you with him?
Yes.
You know, like, yeah. That's the subtext of what he said. And I think that neither of them were really ready for that to come out. And it did. And I really love the very, very end of this episode where Michael has just gotten off the phone with Jan, kind of revealing that he told the cameras what went down through a very, you know, a couple funny scenes. He hangs up with Jan. She's mad. Jim just fought with Pam about what, you know, they said to each other. And so now Jim is just kind of dejected and they look at each other because the way their desks are.
Yes.
And they have that they just connect for a second because they're both kind of in the same boat with the women that they have feelings for at this mm-hmm. point. And I really like that. And I think that's the first time I ever saw that watching the episode for the show.
Oh, was that back and forth moment?
Just Jim and Michael.
Yeah.
Having that silent moment at the end. Like, that was really good. It's really good.
I liked that moment because it, like, we know Jim to be the one that looks into the camera and makes the faces. And so to have him sort of, as you're saying, just sort of to bring Michael into that little bit of moment was really, I agree. It was really nice. And their relationships are very, very different. The relationships mm-hmm. that they have with the other person, but it is nice to sort of have a bit of solidarity. Like, we are both going through some things. And like, I recognize that you are confused and possibly hurt right now. And I also recognize that you are confused and possibly hurt right now. So it's a very sweet moment. And It is a, it's a sweet juxtaposition to what just happened where Michael was literally climbing under his desk to hide from the cameras.
Yeah. It connects the two of them in a really nice way that I don't think that we've seen before, because we saw them very much as separate characters. And now we're starting to see a little bit of their friendship starting in this moment together. Mm-hmm. All right. Oh, the client.
The somehow 22-minute episode that could be an hour, but it's like it does some sort of time magic or something to fit all that in.
It does do time magic, but we don't have time magic, so we have to give out our Dundee.
Nice. Oh, man. The Dundee for best segue so far goes to Tiffany Arment.
Oh, I accept graciously. All right. This week's Dundee. I wanted to give out this Dundee, and I'm going to call it the Art 101 Award, and that's going to go to producer Greg Daniels for his first grader art skills coming in handy to mimic the handiwork of Michael Scott for his Threat Level Midnight Michael Scarn.
I love it.
Screenplay, artwork, poster artwork. I don't know. It was so wonderfully good. I love that they had to scrap the professional artist work and get Greg to do it. So Greg Daniels, if you're listening, I doubt you are, but if you are,
congratulations.
Thank you for putting yourself out there and not being afraid to be terrible at your art.
Amen.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening, and be sure to write reviews over on iTunes and to like us on Twitter. Like us? I don't know. Tweet at us on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter. The more our listeners engage with us, the more Dundees we can give out.
Yes.
We're super excited to give out Dundees to all you fine people. And you can join the Dundee Club with some of our favorite tweeters and reviewers out there. So, yeah. Tall_beats, subscribe over at The Incomparable. That helps the show so much. It's been great. We have some wonderful people who have signed up for subscriptions. We don't know who you are, but we know you're there, and we thank you
so much for
supporting the show. And in the future, that could help us do some fun things like make stickers and stuff like that. So
stickers and tees and other things. We've got some plans tucked away. So
we have an ever growing good idea folder. So it is chocked full of good stuff that you can help make possible by subscribing over at The Incomparable, leaving reviews, and just helping make us super popular.
Yes, especially like I cannot understate how important it is. If you have a moment, it's very easy in the Apple Podcasts app to hop in and leave a review, write up something really quick. And we check those so we can see when people leave reviews. And, you know, that's one of the places that we go to pull for listener Dundees. So please do leave a review if you have a moment.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week back at the office.
I want my baby back, baby back, baby back. I want my baby back, baby back, baby back. I want my baby back,
Chili. Baby back. I was coming in.
I was waiting.
It was good. Our in-show one was very good.